This is RSBNB Update, episode 573, recorded Thursday, June 23rd, 2016. We leaf, we chief. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RSBNB Update, the RuneScape podcast that has been going on for over, 11 years now, just starting our 12th year. This week is Quest Week, of course, so Dave is here. But in addition to Dave being here, Colton is also here, who you guys probably remember from the first quarter of 2016. Welcome back, Colton.
Yes, I am here. Thank you for welcoming me back, Shane.
Yeah, it's great to hear your voice again, and I'm sure the listeners enjoy hearing a bit of diversity on this panel, especially people who have come and gone. So, but anyways, of course, Dave, you're also here.
Indeed.
So we are going to attack this monstrosity known as the Gower Quest, a momentous quest at that. But first, some of you guys might be wondering, where's Earth? We did mention that he would be on the show this week, but unfortunately, at the last few hours, he decided that he wasn't feeling well. Well, actually, he wasn't feeling well, so he had to pull out. So,
rest in peace.
Well, he's not dead.
He may as well be.
I mean, he's dead to us. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow.
No, I'm kidding. We all love Earth.
All right, so the Gower Quest. This was, of course, teased at RuneFest last year, the quest that Andrew and Paul Gower came back as guest designers to tell Jagex what to do with this quest, what would make a classic RuneScape quest, and what they would like to see if they could just do anything in the game. And, well, here we are, Gower Quest. It requires 34 quest points, and that's the only requirement. So you can get that in any way that you want. It's free to play, of course. And the name of the quest is just Gower Quest. So
putting it right out there.
It's, you know, right out there.
Cut to the chase.
Not mincing words.
Yeah, and of course, with it being called Gower Quest, you might be wondering, how did the Gowers get into game? Well, that's just because this quest is not a canonical quest. It breaks the fourth wall from the very beginning.
Except for where it is,
right, I guess. So
it was in the description. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. Where is this?
Oh, yeah, under the description of the quest in the quest log.
Oh, on the quest log.
Before you start it. Okay. Yeah, it said, this quest is not canonical, except in the places that it is, or something to that effect. It was pretty great.
Yeah, so much history with this quest, I feel.
Oh, yeah.
It just kind of goes back to a day when a quest was just out there to do something rather than, you know, tell a story, which, if you look back at many of the free-to-play quests, they're just standard old quests, right? They're not necessarily starting off lore storylines.
Yeah, they're not really a part of a larger arc.
Yeah, Shield of Arav. What else is there? I don't know. But
well, there's the Legends quest and Heroes quest, but that's not really free-to-play. That was sort of later on down the line. But
yep.
So there's your standard, like, Imp Catcher and Sheep Shearer and Cook's Assistant, which was later drawn into the 100th quest storyline. But, you know, all those are fairly simple. Straightforward.
Anyways, you start this off by speaking with the Gower brothers at their farm, which is just south of the Varrock Lodestone, which is southeast of Varrock. So I'll let Colton give us a bit of a rundown of what we experienced in this quest. And as always, spoilers ahead when we are discussing Quest Week.
Yes, many spoilers. So basically, you start there at the farm, and they have taken their real-world likeness and crafted them into in-game models, which I thought it was pretty spot on. I don't know if you guys had any opinions about their models, but they look pretty good to me.
Yeah, they were.
They were fairly accurate. I was actually impressed. It was kind of different seeing Andrew and Paul actually on the front page with the banner, because I mean, that art was pretty spot on. And then, you know, you go into the game and it was, you know, about as accurate as you can be with the given state of RuneScape models, even at NXT. So I thought they did a really good job.
Yeah, definitely. So basically, you talk to them, and I don't know what their deal is with the obsession with cabbages, but it's just an ongoing in joke. And of course,
the thing was that Andrew hated cabbage.
Yeah, And it survives today, 15 years later, and is, of course, the basis of their legacy quest. And here we find that they are cabbage farmers, and that is their well-being, of course. But for some reason, the cabbages are not growing. So they basically send you on a bit of a quest to find out exactly what has been going on with the cabbages and why they're not growing. So in the interest of making the player go out and do their own thing and not be handheld, as it were, because, of course, players hate having their hands held throughout quests, as it was very explicitly said, which I thought that was quite funny. They just basically say, here, go at it. Find a way to talk to the cabbages. And so we just kind of wander around, which I thought was quite nice. It wasn't hard.
Yeah, it wasn't. And, I mean, anyone who has created the gnome speak amulet or the ghost speak amulet or the camel speak or the cat speak amulet will know you're trying to create one of those. So you just look for parts and then throw everything together.
Yeah, exactly. You search a crate, the scarecrow, and the food trough, and you find the tools that you need to make a Braskin amulet, which you charge with a life rune, which obviously there's your first at least real far back reference to, was it RuneScape Classic? Was it RuneScape 2?
It had to have been RS Classic.
Okay, when the Life Altar was rumored and never saw it come into game. So that was rather interesting. And you charge that amulet up and begin your dialogue with the cabbages, which was disorienting, confusing, but extremely fun. And I thought it was easy to follow, but easily
confused.
It
didn't make sense.
It made sense if you really thought about it for a sec. There were just some minor words like mixed up and some additions of unnecessary articles and things of that nature.
Yeah.
It was just...
One of my favorite quotes with the cabbage was, I have sleep. You finish now. I just like the way the cabbage talked.
Yeah.
We leaf, we chief was easily my favorite. That line will live on forever now, at least in my memory. Obviously referencing the we pay, we say
yes,
mindset.
That's
of the
right.
Player base. Yes,
I caught that as well.
We leaf, we chief is now the rallying cry of World 66 rioters. So we talk to the cabbages, and they are apparently rioting because they want party hats. And this is where we get the we leaf, we chief line, which is golden. And we basically go back to Ian, who just hands us four pink party hats for the heck of it. And we give them the party hats, but we then are told that that was actually not the source of why cabbages were not growing, and that we had to go behind sceneries to find out how to fix the root problem. And any input you guys have on this part?
I'd just like, you know, in all honesty, I really didn't know what to think about or to think going into this quest. I thought it was just going to be kind of a cheeky little fun. Okay, do this. And I don't want to say I was surprised, but it was nice to know, because it almost felt like the quest was going to be done after you gave the cabbages, the party hats. And, you know, I expected to be a cutscene where they dig down and, okay, yeah, we changed everything. And yeah, boy, was I wrong. But I really like how they not necessarily focus so much on like the storyline of the quest as they did, you know, paying homage to the veteran players with all of the just sort of, like you said, breaking that fourth wall. I really got a kick out of that. But anyway, continue.
Oh, yeah. So from there, we then go. Then he gives us the Disc of Returning.
Oh, which, that part, yeah.
Yeah, it takes us to the Dwarven Mines.
But there's,
where we
remember the Disc of Returning is still a rare item in game.
Mm-hmm.
So
isn't it blue?
It is.
Yeah, it's like a purplish with yellow.
Purple blue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they kind of palette swapped it a bit. Of course, had to give us a few rares that we can't actually sell or do anything with that are now useless. But
Disc of Returning is 272 mil right now. If you want one.
Just why? Like, what is the point to owning one? Except for if you're going to open a trade window and show someone that you have that. I mean, I just don't understand those rares that you can't wear. Maybe that's fashion.
You don't
want to
eat a pumpkin?
But... No, it's too dangerous to have. Just like the Easter egg.
Yeah. Leave
you're going to eat it.
Yeah.
Anyhow. So then you go to the Dwarven Mine and... you follow where it tells you to go. It's really not that far from the entrance. And it leads you...
Yeah, there's an interesting thing about that, though. The old-fashioned Disc of Returning did actually used to be activated in the Dwarven Mine there.
Really?
Yeah.
See, okay, I didn't know that. See, there's one little callback that I didn't catch. So you're going to have to point these really old ones out for me, Shane, because I'm slightly newer than you are, so...
Yeah.
But you go from there... And it sort of teleports you to this blazingly white room with what is clearly the model of Dulcin's desk, just copy-pasted. And if you, I think if you right-click Thordr's desk, it says that it's clearly not Dulcin's or something like that. It's
Is this after the black hole part?
No, this is during.
No.
Kind of.
Yeah, this is...
Oh, okay.
Wait, you do the black hole thing first?
Yes. That was my impression. The black hole thing, and then you go to the... No, you're fine. I was just making sure that I wasn't losing my mind.
No, yeah. I'm mixing things up. I did this on Monday. So, yeah. You get to the black hole first, and then it gets lit. So, you can't see a thing. There are occasional twinkles to hint if you're having trouble. It's just like a small little sparkle on the screen that sort of hints at where you need to do things next, which I guess was kind of necessary for some people. I didn't have much trouble with it. It was really kind of a straightforward puzzle. I mean, all you had to do is kind of hover around.
Yeah, I just moved my mouse in an XY grid fashion and found everything eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It was fairly straightforward. There were several points that were rather interesting throughout that entire affair. I thought it was interesting. I think some people thought it was lazy or annoying, but I found it just unique. And
did you notice that you could find the pet rock and then you could examine it and see the soft option and whatnot, that you felt a soft pet rock?
Oh, yeah.
What was that?
You could examine the pet rock and feel that it was soft and smooth.
Really? Huh. No, I didn't notice that. I just decided to throw it at the rock because I thought, I can't reach it. I've only got a rock. Use rock on wall. I mean, that's what RS has taught you to do, right? I mean, it's a callback to the old.
Yeah,
well,
you just
I don't
use
know
everything
what to do.
On everything, right?
Exactly.
Well, that's how I was whenever we were making the amulet. It's like, oh gosh, this is gonna be bad. I'm like, wait a minute, this is RuneScape. I hover over until I get a little mouse over that says search. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, there's four things.
Just examine and use things on one another. That's all you gotta do. Real straightforward.
Indeed.
So after you basically, and the orange, did you guys struggle with the orange at all?
Yeah, I was trying to find it.
I was like, I wonder if I could eat this. And it's like, you're supposed to do that.
Yeah, I just was like, we need a key. I have an orange. What should I do? Obviously, you try and use the orange to see if that works. It doesn't work, and then
you try to scrape it along the wall, but nothing happens.
Yeah, I did that as well.
And that's one thing about this quest, and it continues on throughout. That there's such a variety of dialogue, well, not dialogue options, but examine text and things like that. Different Easter eggs that you can find. By examining things and by using things on one another that just have been sort of lacking in the more recent quests that focus more on story and not as much on immersion. Well, I guess not immersion, really.
Well, yeah, this is an immersion when we're going back to, you know, the classics of RS, right?
Yeah, it's more of just, it feels more to me, it feels more complete, feature complete, when everything is examinable, things have sort of cheeky different texts when you use things on one another. Like when you use two oranges on one another, it says, now kiss. You get a little box. It's just so great that, and I'm so glad that they're making this quest replayable.
Yes, I was going to save that for later, but they have started the work to make this replayable.
Yes, which is great because I'm sure I missed a good amount of stuff and I want to go back and find everything. So I'm glad that they're doing that. But anyhow, you find your way about and end up basically going through the gate of log in or however you want to pronounce
it. So clever.
But you guys know why it was called and spelt that way?
I do not. Mm-hmm.
There were two skeletons on login screen, and one of them was named Login, and I forget what the other one was named, but it was spelt exactly like the way we saw it in this quest here. So that is why it was called that. And this is, of course, once again, going all the way back to RS2's inception.
Wow, that's too funny. See, again, more little details. It's all over in this quest. It's hard to pick it up on your first playthrough. But yeah. So this takes you to the blindingly white room that I was speaking about earlier with Thordr the Dwarf. And he basically breaks the whole fourth wall for us again, telling us that we are going to behind the scenes.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's something else. That's Tim and Crunchy that were on the login page.
Yeah. Oh. Well, then who is log N something?
It was something.
I think
something.
That was just trying to be a play on words. I don't know if it was like significant as like a character name or something that we were unaware of, but possibly. But to my knowledge, I don't think it was.
Yeah. Listeners, let us know.
Yes, please.
But basically, we go there and he gives us the choice to be, I think it's either reworked content, unreleased content, dead content, or something else maybe, in order to get into the bar, the behind the scenes.
Yeah, I forget
bar.
What the other one is, but what did you guys choose for that?
I'm unreleased content.
All right.
I chose dead content. Just
okay,
to see
how'd that go for you?
I chose it because I figured there was mention of this is where, you know, things go to die. It's like, oh, do you remember the rat pits and stuff? I was like, okay, I'll choose dead content to see if that gives me sort of a separate instance, because having that sort of, judging by how the quest had gone so far, I figured that decision actually mattered. So I kind of wanted to see maybe if I chose dead content, I'd be phased into to an area where it would have like pretty much all the dead content and it'd almost be like an archive, but I was mistaken. But yeah, I was like, okay, yeah, I'll pick dead content. There's still some dead content that needs to be mopped up, so maybe I'll get insight into that. But anyway, not so lucky.
I went for graphically reworked content.
Well, there we go. We got all sides of the spectrum then. Perfect.
I just wanted to make sure I look good, right?
You always look good, Shane.
As long
Thank
as you,
you
got your farming cape.
Thank you.
Oh my. So we then make our way into the behind the scenes bar, which has some pretty jamming music. I liked it. It was funky, to say the least.
Yeah, and it screamed of 1990s, didn't it?
I don't know. To me it was like 1970, like late disco.
Oh,
type.
Okay.
I don't know about you. But
well, I'm not qualified to judge on that side then.
I guess that's true.
He does enjoy Kesha for her reggae. So.
I thought that was in the past.
TikTok, hey, it made a show title. I got to bring it up at least once.
So we, and right when you are thrown into the bar, it's just like you see that there's so much that can be done there, and it's so perfect because it was just like a playground. because you can go around talking to everybody before you even move on with the quest, which is of course what I did. I don't know about you guys, if you decided to walk around.
I think
around.
I talked to most of them.
Yeah, I went around. I made sure I sort of explored a lot of the stuff. And I will say, you know, we're going to touch on this a little bit later in the podcast. But going off the fact that I chose dead content, I was kind of going into this assuming that everything that I was going to see next would be dead content. And obviously that it was not the case. But I went in there. And as we all know, what's coming out next week, Shane and I were having a little bit of a discussion about this a couple days ago. And the first thing I saw when I go in there is Araxor. I'm like, oh, wow, is this foreshadowing that Araxor is going to be dead content? This is interesting.
Let's save the bad stuff for later.
But anyway, I thought that was funny, but we'll discuss that later.
By the way, login was what they called their flames on the side, the flames of login, which were the flames that basically put all the rune symbols up and changed at the holiday time. So I knew it was related to the login screen in some way.
All right. So where were we? We were
talking about talking to everyone inside behind the scenes.
Okay. Are there any particular NPCs that you guys enjoy? Before I get into the actual the storyline, there are a few that really, really made me giggle.
Yeah, I liked Lucian.
Okay, me too.
I got the vibe that he was kind of like hippie and like, yeah, man, what's going on? And he was always saying, man. And it was very interesting because there was a few NPCs I talked to that I was actually able to put sort of a accent or dialect to their words just through text. And that's kind of difficult, especially in RuneScape. For the record, I don't have what's it called? The voiceovers or the player? Gosh, I can't think of it. You know what I mean? The player voices in the quest. Yeah,
quest was not voiceovered. They don't do that anymore.
Gotcha. But anyway, yeah, I liked Lucian. He seemed really chill, and I just liked the way the fourth wall was breaking down with Guthix as well. Just kind of being an actor and like, oh yeah, this isn't like somebody so big and so like, you know. Having such an instance in the game, and it's just like, oh yeah, I'm just kind of like a traveling actor, and you know, you can be my agent and stuff like that. I thought that was really cool too. So those were the two that really stood out to me, I would say.
All right. Well, since you've already said Lucian, I'd like to mention the graphical environment artists that were there. And I mean, they were just sitting around the pub, right? So I mean, you don't necessarily think that they're going to be a major part of it, but for anyone who has worked or knows how graphic stuff works, you'll know that sometimes when you're 3D modeling, you do need to take into account the normal of a shape in 3D space. And one of them was complaining about normals, and another one was complaining about something else. So
the map editor and stuff.
Yeah, the map editor. So it was just fun to see that kind of stuff from the development behind the scenes. So I got a kick out of talking to the environment artists. There was also Steve, the Chaos Elemental.
Mm-hmm.
ordinarily, you'd think that, oh, the Chaos Elemental is here and is going to talk to you in gibberish. But no, he actually spoke in clear English. And he said he's obsolete since behind-the-scenes articles and videos have come out.
I got a kick out of that.
And that there was no point to what he was doing because everyone would just figure out his anagrams too quickly. So those would be mine. How about you, Colton?
Lucian was definitely up there. Yeah, he definitely had the hippie voice in my mind. Sueros was
yes, the alternate universe Zaros, who succeeded in maintaining control of his empire.
Apropos, the Iluyanka was pretty great.
Before we go too far, what about a quest in the alternate universe of Suaros where that empire had continued? Do you think there'd be a way to do that?
Well, the bard skill would have to be a thing. We'd have
so you
to
can
have
shred the guitar.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I was hoping for something serious, but
it was serious as we can be with Suaros.
What kind of lore would there be? I mean, he says it's a perfect world, so it would be kind of boring.
Yeah, just kind of go.
Yeah, we wouldn't have quests.
I guess. I don't know. They did an alternate universe for Star Trek, so why can't we have an alternate universe for RuneScape once?
Please, no. Everything gets messy with it's alternate universes. It's just ask Legend of Zelda. Anyhow, apropos the Iluyanka, the lore fail line was pretty great.
The lore fail line?
Yeah. Basically, the entire dialogue for apropos was... look at me, I'm a giant walking lore fail kind of thing, because I'm the exact same character model as the other Iluyanka. I'm just color swapped, and we know from lore that Iluyanka are supposed to be varied in shape and size and all that kind of, but anyhow.
We also had the two Xanax arguing over their graphical reworks.
I was about to mention that.
That was pretty funny.
I hated both of those Xanax very much, and so seeing them react to player reaction of those two and put them in the game arguing about the new prettier Xanax was it was pretty great.
There was also Bandos's remains.
Bandos, where's your head?
Yeah, you tried to talk to it.
Yeah, it was pretty great. Guthix, of course, was an actor. I can't think of many others, but it was too good. There were too many to
I found it very interesting. You know, it, obviously it was part of the main storyline, but the God Wars bosses. Some of the biggest and, you know, most well-known villains in the game for quite some time, really kind of the forefront of PVM, you know, in RS. And, you know, so they've always been an enemy, and you, you know, walk up to them, you're having drinks and you're talking to them, and they're like, oh, hey, what's going on? Sure, I'll get, you know, you're getting advice from Bandos or from Grardor about, you know, romantic stuff. It's like, that was really funny.
Yeah, well, that's in a little bit, so.
Yeah.
Is this behind the scenes? Yeah, we can go back to behind the scenes after the quest now, can't we?
Yeah.
With the Disc of Returning.
We can.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't go there yet, but I knew there was a reason we keep the Disc of Returning. All right.
Yeah, in fact, the Black Knight Titan is, we'll get to that later, but he shows up there afterward. So continuing from there, I just wanted to go into it a little bit, because I absolutely love
this
bar.
The part that made this quest, much like the cutscene and the books in Kindred Spirits made that quest, I think.
Agreed. I mean, the bar was made, it's made it seem like it was so vast, because it was an infinitely looping bar. Obviously you probably came to notice that after running through
and
it
of course
times.
The infinite loop is a thing in programming.
And if you I don't know if you guys here looked tilted your cameras enough to see the horse heads on the wall. Did you see those?
Mm-mm.
There will be a picture in my article later this week, so we'll plug there.
Thank you. You're doing a good job.
Yeah, I got to get my plugs in. Nice plug. Horse heads are up there. It's another little Easter egg, but the bar just made the quest. It was environmentally just, I don't know. I couldn't have envisioned anything better for a nostalgia-driven quest that was all about irreverence and lighthearted humor.
Right.
So.
And it felt like it wasn't real, but it was real enough that you could tell that you were still in the game. So basically what I mean is that the fact that it's not real means you know that you're in fact breaking the fourth wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can tell it's not like it's not actually impacting the game lore or anything like that, but you can it's hard to describe how to separate that in your mind, but it was still very, it felt like a natural transition into that bar.
Yeah, definitely. Reason we're here now.
Yeah. Not just to talk to people, shockingly enough, what our actual purpose is to find out what is wrong. And to find this out, we talked to Spiral Orb, which is the DJ Spider, who is mixing up the funky jams in the middle of the bar.
Dropping the beats.
Yes, dropping all the beats. Dropping the bass as well. And we basically find out that there are There's the life altar, which is in the basement of the bar, is broken or malfunctioning for some reason. And if due to some pieces being missing because of an explosion or something of that nature, I think. And Lucien, Thok, and the Chaos Elemental?
Yep, that's right. Yep.
Those three are the ones that know where the pieces lie, Chaos Elemental being Steve. So we're supposed to go talk to those guys and find out exactly how to get those pieces. The first one that I did was Thok.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how you guys began.
I actually went to I did the Grand Exchange one, and there was, come to find out, there was one piece that I had done incorrectly. So I was like, okay, well, maybe I have to do it in the order. So then I went back and did Thok.
Okay. I did Lucien, then the pipe, and then the beta testing.
Oh, so you did it in the actual right order.
I did the pipe first, actually, because I just found that and it just looked like a simple puzzle, so I just knocked that out quickly, actually.
And it was a rather simple puzzle. Yeah, we'll start with that one, actually. That's Steve's.
Yeah, the Chaos Elementals puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Basically, his is rather quite simple. He just tells you that it went to the Grand Exchange. Apparently, the Grand Exchange is only a series of pipes.
Just like the internet's a series of tubes.
That really scared me when he said that, because I thought it was going to be some sort of a maze in so far, like the jungle area just south of the nature altar, with all the vines and climbing up. I was like, oh no, this is going to be terrible. And then I go in and it's just like a little little like mobile game type puzzle. So it's like, okay, this is a lot better.
Yeah, it was really quite nice. Basically, the puzzle is just three different sizes of pipes that you need to organize to connect and go to the proper places. It's really quite simple. It's hard if you look at it and don't know how to tackle it. Like, for the first couple minutes, I think most people are just dumbfounded by all the pipes that they see, and they're like, oh my God, what do I do? But once you suss out the fact that one's pipe size goes to the size of the pipe has to remain constant.
Yes, and that's the number one hint that I would give to anyone doing this.
Yes, so that the small stays with the small pipe, the medium with the medium, and the large with the large. And if you just connect them all, you'll get it. It's really quite simple. So that was a nice little puzzle. I mean, throughout the entire thing, I don't know if you guys checked your chat box too much, but you get little messages saying that something you've done has caused noob account to gain a lot of money, or
there was
climbing
a few that...
boots have spiked in price, or panic sell wands, all that stuff. It was
I really enjoyed the humor in which they poked fun at themselves. Prime example is the whole climbing.
The climbing witch?
What was that, like 2010 or 2009?
What are we talking about?
They said...
climbing boots.
Yeah, they said overnight of climbing boots unexpectedly skyrocketed by 2,000%. It's like, oh my gosh, that's terrible.
Yeah. There's another one that I was surprised wasn't in there, speaking of market values. Once upon a time, I got to believe it was in 05 or 06. At the end of, just a really innocuous news posting talking about what was coming up, they said, hold on to your hats. And of course, the only hat in game at the time was the Robin Hood hat. So everyone held Robin Hood hats and the price shot up, which, I mean, had nothing to do with the post. But
yeah, that's
funny. Always remember that one.
Yeah.
Nice. So basically, once you've figured out how to do that puzzle properly, it will yield the second puzzle piece. Or one of the puzzle pieces.
It's just one of three. It doesn't matter what order you do it in.
And you can add that to the life altar right away, or you can continue going on with your adventure.
I just held it.
Yeah, same. So the next one, the we encounter or we can encounter, doesn't really matter, is Lucien's. And his big thing is that it got stolen from him by the wise old man who is the infamous bank robber from previous questing glory. And that it he's basically hidden it within his own bank vault. And we have to find out how to get it from his bank to basically stage a heist on the bank thief himself. And to do so, we need a bit of help. So we need someone to distract the receptionist or whoever she was. We need someone to draw the guard away from the gate. We need another pair of helpers to remove the gate. And we need a locksmith to basically get us into the bank chest itself. And all you have to really do is go back into the bar and find people who have the dialogue option. If it doesn't give you an option, hey, can you help me with a bank heist within the first few space bars, then you can move on to the next NPC. It's really not too difficult to find them. In the end, you find Romeo, who will only agree to help if you find five people who are very specifically named out to be the God Wars dungeon bosses, who will give him love advice. So we go to the God Wars dungeon bosses, and they give us a rather wide array of advice for picking up. Sutzeroth was all about the looks, I think. Grardor was the only one who seemed to actually, you know, have a good idea of how to please the ladies, but
I thought so too,
which was kind of a reversal on the typical. so we pass that advice then on to Romeo, and he agrees to help. Our second piece of help ends up being Guthix, who is a world-class thespian, as we find out, who is in dire need of work. And so he basically agrees to help as long as we will go and talk to the cabbages that are also at the bar and put in a good word for him as an actor. And it turns out that they are staging a play called Put Those Edicts Back Where They Came From,
yep.
Or So Help Me, which obviously is a Monsters, Inc. reference for those who've seen that.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Put that thing back where it came from, or so help me. yeah, it's pretty great. So you put in a good word for him, they hire him, and he will help you to remove the gate itself. We need Tim and Crunchy, the environmental leads, who basically agree to help as long as we will refresh the environmental artists that are wandering around the bar. So we give them a cup of tea each to help them be revived from their wearying work. And then they, Tim and Crunchy, agree to help. And last we have Svenishev, whom I was not familiar with his story before looking into it because of this quest. Apparently there was a glitch. I think he said it was sometime in 2009. I should have screen capped that dialogue. I forgot to for some reason, but he, there was a penguin who during the penguin hide and seek for some reason glitched out, and players could repeatedly find him and basically constantly click, 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 click to rack up points. And that was the joke with Svenishev, is that everyone forgot him after they first encountered him, because do you understand how it kind of connects?
Yeah, like a forgotten bug once it was fixed, right?
Well, no, because they could quote unquote find him for the first time.
Okay.
It was kind of hard line to follow, but once I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of funny. So Svenishev, who is a lovely penguin and deserves the proper Soviet accent that all penguins get.
Spanish of the locksmith.
Yes, exactly. So we have him, and he just sort of agrees without any conditions. He just wants to do it because he likes it. So we employ those the four parties to help us. We stage our bank heist, and bada boom, we have our next piece. Is there anything you guys want to say about that part?
No, I thought this was relatively simple. You just go there and you talk to them, and then you do the bank heist, and lo and behold, you got the other piece.
Yep.
So, and I mean, if you had talked to all these people beforehand, maybe this might have just seemed a little bit simple, or if you were doing it in order, then perhaps you had a different experience than if you had talked to everyone as you were just going through before you actually started the life alter part. But anyways, yeah, that's good. So we got 2 out of 3 pieces now.
Mm-hmm. And the last piece is with Thok. And Thok claims that he saw it with his friend Max in the beta room portal. And so basically we go into this beta testing world where Max apparently goes to get all the tips and tricks down of all the skills before they're released, which there was some rather interesting dialogue.
You get the part about him breaking into tears about how long it took him to get his invention cape.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, the dialogue with Max was great. They did a really good job with his character. And basically, our job here is to, in order to get the piece from Max, we have to max all 3 beta skills that are going on, which are all storied and long-awaited in their nature. We have writing, we have sailing, and we have, of course, bank standing.
Yep.
So basically all you do is you go, the writing is really simple. It's like the Heffen agility pillars. It's really quite easy. It takes maybe 60 seconds.
Yeah. I like the animations, especially that they had on those. I mean, who'd have ever thought you'd be riding a toy horse on RuneScape, right?
Exactly.
And the hand motions and everything, all you need a rope and you're ready to go to the rodeo.
So, oh my. Yes. Those animations couldn't be misused at all.
Well, yeah, and the ground is partially green, so I guess you could green screen that if you wanted to.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Didn't even think about that.
So you basically ride your way to 99.
Oh, I see what you mean. They couldn't said they couldn't be reused.
Yes.
Okay.
The player base could do some interesting stuff with some of those poses. Apparently, it was suggested by a Jmod before that those some of those positions might look a little bit suggestive, but it was passed off and said, whatever.
Yeah, I thought they were fine. You guys think they were okay?
I thought it was.
I think it could have been on the line. Yeah, I think it was definitely on the line for sure. At least a couple of them, but anyway.
It was, yeah.
It's well, if they ever brought mounts to RuneScape, right?
Exactly.
Oh, my. Then we go sailing. And basically all you do there is you find, like, treasure in little bubbly areas.
No, you just shoot the NPCs and that's it.
You could do that, too.
Oh, okay. So I had no idea about the treasure then.
Yeah, it's a really featured skill. You can train it in a variety of ways.
So you say clearly almost out of beta, as we can all tell.
Oh, yes. They are almost ready. And lastly, you have bank standing, where basically you just walk into the room and constantly your player is like distracted or can't take the pressure anymore and tries to leave. And you just have to force your player to stay in the bank to keep gaining XP until you get 99. It's pretty wonderful.
Oh, that was beautiful. I don't know. I really enjoyed the skilling part.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, just because it gave you kind of an insight into what something could look like if they were prototyping a skill, because they start, of course, with the blank things with no textures, and then you want to get something down for the play testing. So then that gave me an idea that, oh, maybe we could do something along the lines of this sailing skill in game. Like, what would that be? That where you shoot people or you pick treasure up or something like that. It doesn't necessarily, you know, need to be on water or anything, right?
Exactly.
So,
yeah. Throughout this entire thing, I don't know if you guys, there's a Star Wars reference in there for you, Shane.
Oh my God! Where
in Max's dialogue, he says, "I think it's hold on, I have the dialogue somewhere." He says, "You're doing great, kid. Don't get cocky," which is basically a derivation of a Han Solo line from A New Hope. And you can tell him, I recognize that line, and you will go into a bit of dialogue about Star Wars and stuff like that. It's pretty great. You didn't get that, Shane?
No,
You never clicked that dialogue?
No, out. I didn't click that.
Oh, well, that's sad. I know you love Star Wars. Moving on. There are also in this beta area a lot of doors that hint at like skills that are not going to work or have been passed on, you know, like that there was the acid skill, which was a chemistry joke about saltiness, you know.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one.
Pretty great. There was one with German text that was apparently something that looked like blood, but was apparently marmalade storage. There were several others that were just cheeky little examine texts. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to go to those doors, but if you're interested, you can examine them. And I thought that was very nice, because another thing that just is lacking, has been lacking in more recent quests that I feel they did a great job with in this new
and
quest.
I mean, we got to remember that this was, of course, co-designed by the Gower brothers. So it's what they would have wanted in a quest back in the olden days.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And this gives you the third piece. And once you have the third piece, you go down to the basement, as it were, through the life altar portal, put the pieces back together. And who's been behind it all but the infamous Black Knight Titan. In fact, the graphical rework of the old model of the Black Knight Titan. He's basically lured you for your Disc of Returning. Because
such
he wants
a classic storyline, right?
The quest has been so linear. Yeah, it's I kind of sighed when I saw the Black Knight Titan, because I was like, oh no, I don't want a new model for the old Black Knight Titan, but it made for a good ending, because it just capped it all off with a classic RS style humor. And basically we fight with him a few times. He keeps respawning because of all the life runes around. So we have Crispy the Cabbage go back to grab the Gower brothers to take the place of the Cabbage Mancer, whom the Black Knight Titan had killed. And they basically convert all the excess life runes into cabbages, so that the Black Knight Titan will no longer respawn. And we defeat him, and that is the quest.
You need to kill him 6 times.
Wow.
One first time, and then 5 subsequent times while the Gower brothers are holding down the supply of life runes. So, and 9,900 life points, but they did say that it will be scaling, so I'm not sure what it would be scaling on, though I do have 99 constitution, so maybe just that.
Yeah, that could have been it.
I assume you both have 99 constitution?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So that would be that. And yeah, that's it. Quest complete. Basically, after that, Andrew, Paul, and Ian just stay in the life altar to keep guard, and you're free to go back and talk to them if you like, or they can just send you up to the surface world, and you can continue on your merry way.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, the rewards for this quest were really classic in the true sense. One quest point, 15 coins, obviously for the 15 years. The Brassica Prime Godsword Override, which works for the two-handed melee weapons. Cabbage Mancer Override Outfit, a Retro Login Teleport Override for the home teleport, and Crispy the Cabbage Follower Pet. And, of course, the ability to choose which Black Knight Titan you want. So, I'm leaving my Black Knight Titan as the old Black Knight Titan.
Same. About,
yeah, same. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. You going to let Crispy the Cabbage follow you around?
Maybe.
Realistically, probably not. No? But we'll see. We'll see.
It's not an override, so dead content.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah, that was something I immediately tested was, can I use this to override my yak? And no, you can't, unfortunately. So, well, that's kind of too bad. But what about the Cabbage Mancer outfit as well?
I actually, I didn't delve into that. I should have.
Yeah, I like it because it's nice and green, so it kind of goes well with the Herblore cape and the farming cape. So,
there you go. So
right now I'm only using the feet, but once summer is over and I change out of that outfit, we'll probably go to something involving the cabbage outfit, so that's good. Only one tiny complaint about it, it's clipping with the new model skill capes,
Which
I thought we wanted to get rid of with the new model skill capes, so... Yeah. Though it is a mastery cape I'm wearing, so maybe those weren't updated to avoid clipping, but
yeah.
I don't know. I thought we were beyond that. So, anyways, that's just a minor niggle about this. So, but yeah, I quite enjoyed this quest.
Yeah, I did too.
It just goes back to what questing on RuneScape was back in free-to-play, and of course, you know, what some of the early member quests were about too, when it didn't always have to be about the huge storylines as we've discussed beforehand. And I think that this was a good way to basically look at the past of RuneScape's history and see what all the NPCs were that we've dealt with, what Andrew and Paul and Ian feel about the game, and what they ultimately view the game as, perhaps from their own personal perspectives, and then they can put that in the game here with that same kind of classic humor. So
yeah.
I very much enjoyed it.
Agreed. It was a great way not only to look back at the successes of RuneScape, but to sort of laugh about and to learn from its previous failures, sort of taking jabs at other games, at its own player base. It was irreverent. It was silly. It was, in my mind, it was perfect and exactly what they told us we would be getting. So,
yeah.
5 out of 5 for me.
Okay. How about you, Dave?
Yep, I'm going to have to go with 5 out of 5, mostly because it really exceeded my expectations. As I had mentioned to Shane earlier as well, you know, I really sort of expected this dry, cheap, you know, British humor that's just kind of like over the top and, you know, just not really my style. You know, we got the humor in there. It was definitely more my speed. You know, I can definitely relate to a lot of it.
Yeah.
And we got a huge, huge, huge dosage of nostalgia and sort of looking back. And I really enjoyed not only the successes that they portrayed, but also, you know, most importantly, taking stabs at themselves. I thought that was really funny and lighthearted, and it, you know, really showed them that they are aware of what's happened, and you know, we can look back and laugh on it now. So yeah, it definitely gets a 5 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, and I mean, I have gone on record so many times in saying that these quests, I like quests, I like lore, but sometimes you just want to do a quest where you don't have to stress out about, oh, am I missing a key plot detail? Am I going to make a mistake that's going to send me somewhere and die in combat? That kind of thing. This was just nice, laid back, a good quest to relax with. So definitely with both of you on this one. And, you know, coming in, I was a little bit unsure about the rating I'd give it. Typically, I only like to give 5 out of 5s to quests that, you know, are truly groundbreaking or solve a major storyline or something like that. The last quest I gave 5 out of 5 was, of course, Plague's End. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to go with that in this case as well. mainly for the pure momentous occasion of 15 years of RuneScape, the fact that it is basically a quest that uses all the same mechanics that we had back in the olden days of RS, and that it was just a joy to play.
So, wow, so you're saying 5x5 too? It's a consensus?
Yeah, it is, actually.
Wow, that's big.
Yeah, and I mean, there are other quests I could have given 5 to. I think I could have given 5 to River of Blood, but there were a few niggles with it, and it just didn't feel on the same level as this or Plague's End, so that's why I didn't do that. And in retrospect, I'm happy I didn't give River of Blood 4.5, or rather 5, and saved it for this.
Agreed. Yeah, I think this was, in terms of a quest with a more lighthearted and as I've said before, silly tone, this really nailed it. There were, I don't think, any glaring issues to me. So that's why I gave the score I gave it.
Excellent. And, you know, as much as we'd like to see more quests like this, I don't know if they will continue on in this direction.
Yeah, I feel like this was kind of a special instance, and I think that would sort of take away from the sanctity of the style. You know, I feel like if we get a lot more quests like this, even on a yearly basis, I think that'll kind of become normal and it'll become stale. So I think it's do I think they're going to continue it? It's a possibility. But again, I think that it's best sort of kept just with the replayability feature. You know, if you want more of it, you can go back. And maybe they can add stuff to the behind the scenes as, you know, part of an event maybe. But I don't know if it would be in their best interest to sort of continue this style of quest on their own. But
yeah.
And see, I don't know. I'm of the opinion that in terms of just the style of quest, I think that it's really refreshing to have this, and I honestly feel like it's a great way to maybe every 3 quests, every 2 quests, something like that, having a more small, lighthearted. And I've been advocating for
and
this.
And that was supposed to be the idea, a bottle quest, which we've only had one by my count.
Yeah, well,
of doing that. So
see when the next one ever.
And see, that's why I said in the 2017 survey, more quests.
Mm-hmm.
Just have the ones that aren't, you know, features be bottle quests. Mm-hmm. And then I think you would satisfy a lot of people, including myself. And, you know, unlike that Broken Home quest, this is an actual quest that I'd go and replay. Maybe not every week, but perhaps once a month even.
Yeah.
Just for, I mean, I don't think they need to add any extra rewards to it, maybe.
No.
I mean, it's perfectly fine how it is. And the ability to replay this quest was obviously based on the feedback that it garnered, I think, because they wouldn't have put that kind of effort into doing something like this and already start prototyping the update if it wasn't, you know, a huge quest, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with this and if they add on any kind of extra rewards or reward currency as we have for Broken Home in terms of the lamps or reward currency for Dimension of Disaster. Mm-hmm. But with that being said, I don't think you have the right, or anyone has the right to complain about this quest. And I was telling you this in the middle of the week, Colton, is because it is technically not a canonical quest. So unless you just enjoy complaining about things, you have nothing to complain about lore-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed.
So very interesting. And I mean, 15 years of RS, what are you going to do? This only comes around once, right?
Exactly.
So very positive overall. And I think this is the first quest in quite some time that we've had consensus on such a high rating like this. That's pretty good. Anything else before we move on to the other updates of the week?
Nope. I think we covered most of it.
Same. I think got it.
Well, with that being said, look out for Crispy the Cabbages running about RuneScape and retro login teleport animations. I'm using that one. So with that being said, an excellent quest to play and also free to play. So though I do wonder how free to players would feel about this if they're not, you know, fully updated on all the potential characters and whatnot, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, well.
Oh, yeah. Good point. And if they even have like dialogue options about ritual to Majerat with Lucien and all that stuff.
Yeah, because 34 quest points, and I believe the max free-to-play quest points is something like 42.
Yeah.
So.
I didn't think of that.
Anyways, that's just a little minor thing, but people will enjoy it regardless of whether or not they know what's going on in the other quests that were mentioned. So the other thing we got this week in terms of the main stage update was the Telos pre-release event. So if you head down to the Heart of Gelinor, you can speak to Soothsayer Sybil at the entrance and collect the 4 key fragments for defeating each general once again. And then you combine them and then you create the key to access Telos. So we know that this is going to be a requirement to access Telos when it arrives next week. And that is that basically you need to kill each guardian once to get the key, and it's a guaranteed drop. So this will, of course, be priming the wheels for next week's update, which we actually do have some information about right now. Now, I don't know how you guys feel about this. I did some questioning around, and granted it's not a huge sample size, but most of the people I have talked to have either said they don't want to hear about, you know, these exact releases in terms of rewards that are going to be coming, or they don't care. So what do you guys think? You guys think they should be detailing the drops from critters before they're released?
I think the most they should have done was giving us the names of the items and showing us the art. I don't think they should have released the levels, because I think that has a definite economic impact. I don't think they should have released any of the specials or the stats of the equipment. I don't think they should have talked about boss mechanics. I think all of that should have been left for release, because that adds to the mystique and the challenge around it all. But, you know, if they want to release that information, obviously I have no say in that. But I just feel it kind of ruins a bit of the release day hype.
Yep, and that's what everything, every update, every quest previously was designed to be about. Was that, oh, we're releasing this update and there's such a reward being associated with it, and you're not going to find out what this is until after the fact. Like, for example, when the Death Altar came out, we didn't know that that was at the end of Morning's End Part 2. We had no idea that that was going to be a reward. So, and same thing goes for the Law Altar. Like, back in the olden days, and, you know, this is going back to doing updates as we did them in the past with, as we saw with the Gower Quest, updates were not really talked about in terms of the rewards that they gave. So, I don't know. I'm not a fan of it, as you can probably tell. But there's nothing we can do about it. So, maybe it's just a way of, you know, looking at what's going on here, and that we need to basically see that, okay, we're in a society that values rewards and knowing what we're going to get before we commit to do something like that. Because the general sense of gaming over the past 5 years, I feel, has been towards more instant gratification, quick little mobile games, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So, and same thing for Troll Stronghold. We had no idea that the Law Altar was going to come out with Troll Stronghold. You have any idea how big that was back in the day, the ability to craft your own law runes?
Oh, yeah, that was huge. That would probably be the equivalent of, you know, a Soul Altar, you know, today. But as we've made clear, you know, it would probably be in the as many behind the scenes as possible. So, you know, we would definitely know it's coming. But, you know, it is what it is, and it's a shame. But, you know, going back to should they be releasing, you know, the stats and the sort of the nitty-gritty of the new stuff, given the state of RuneScape and just the way the game works, absolutely not. It's a very economically driven game. A lot of MMOs necessarily aren't, so it's a little different. And a lot of other MMOs that receive updates like this is usually in the form of some sort of an expansion, to where, you know, they get a big cluster of updates, you know, whether it be every 4 months, you know, bi-yearly, what have you. But it's not necessarily based on the economy, because it's not as much of a sandbox game as RuneScape is. It's more of a kind of a gear grind, PVM, combat based, But, you know, being a game that's so skill-based and, you know, heavily relying on the economy, you know, that's only going to have negative effects. And that translates to the real world just with speculation and all that stuff. So it's definitely, in my opinion, ill-advised. But again, what can we do except sit back and, you know, watch it unfold. But it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. So,
yeah. The rewards, I guess we can just say what they are briefly. I'm not going to dwell too much on them. We have the Zaros Godsword, which of course has its own special attack, the Saren Bow and Sliske's Staff. And for fighting, the Zamorak side of Telos, you get an ability codex, which gives you, a new constitution based ability, which actually looks kind of useful. So aside from that, these are going to be level 92 weapons, of course, displacing Drygor's and perhaps Araxor's weapons. Colton, what would you have to say about that?
The only one that's really, really in danger is the staff, because the Sliske staff is almost the exact same thing, except buffed in terms of stats. The Saren Godbow has a lesser range than the Noxious Longbow, so you still get advantage there. And the Noxious Scythe still has its halberd type extra range to it as well, with the AoE abilities that you can use with the halberd. So it does have a slight advantage in some scenarios over these Zaros Godsword. So they're the bow and the scythe still have uses, but unfortunately the staff will be likely taking a bit of a tank.
All right. And we also know that the mechanics of this boss will be easier than Araxor.
At least at its base.
At its
However,
base.
It can increase to 4,000% enraged, which is where its cap is, which, for those who don't understand how that mechanic works, that means 40 times its base damage.
And what's Araxor's enrage cap?
300, which is 3 times the base. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
So
potentially very dangerous.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think we're talking about a daily reset for Telos, right?
I think so.
Okay. Well, I guess you've kind of allayed my fears just a little bit. Because I was thinking that, oh, so we're getting this boss creature that's going to be coming into RS. It's going to be easier than Araxor, and a good chunk of its weapons are going to replace Araxor's weapons as ones that we can see. So I guess with the enrage mechanic and the fact that the Araxor's weapons still maintain uniqueness is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Agreed, yeah. There are still... they made the weapons different enough that noxious weapons will still keep a good amount of their value. But given that the base of where Telos starts its difficulty is around challenge mode, God Wars Dungeon 2, it's not going to be an easy fight even from the get-go. So I can't imagine that most players will be able to get off more than a few kills a day.
All right. Well... that's good. That's positive. That's a better way of doing it than just making something that's easier than Araxor. Though it might start out easier, it will end a little bit harder. I do think that, though, you know, spelling out the whole details of this ahead of the update is still wrong, because I think that should be left to something that players should decide, and maybe even go so far as to say that when this kind of thing happens, we don't necessarily even need to list it on the Grand Exchange on the website, list it in-game, but don't list it on the website as to what the items are going to be. So, and you know, this just comes from wanting to add a bit more of a mystery to the game itself compared to what we have right now, because it seems like every reward for every quest is spelled out to the T of what you're going to receive when you do it, and I just like a bit of exploration in that fact. Like I mentioned, we had no idea where we were going to get the Law Altar or the Death Altar from those two quests. Dragon Chain Body was a surprise from the Kalphite Queen, so on and so forth. So that's just the kind of feeling I'd like to create and maintain, NRS if at all possible.
Sure.
But of course, we'll talk more about Telos next week. Shall we move on to the patch notes?
We shall.
Sure.
All righty. Well, a number of interesting things this week to mention. First up is that unused fishing rod automatics can now be correctly destroyed, though I don't know why you would want to do that, because they do require a fair share of materials to make.
Yeah.
Teleporting from the Barrow's sister tomb with Draken's medallion no longer uses up charges, which is good because, I mean, obviously it's kind of a different area, so they just forgot to add that as a case to the Draken's medallion to not take a charge. Players with the 15-year anniversary emote can now perform the 2009 variant. You guys know what we had in 2009?
I think we went over this before.
Yeah, we did. But yeah. 2009 is obviously, I think it looks like Morning's End Part 2. The removal of random events and Zanuck as well here. So that is what you'll see if you perform the 2009 emote. Interesting, though. Did you guys get what this was at the very beginning? Or did you guys look at this emote?
I did not know.
No, neither have I.
Okay. See, I wish they would put these emote things in the patch notes with an animation of what it was, just to show people what they're missing, because putting it in the patch notes basically means that, oh, you need to go fetch this yourself, and you might not notice since you got this emote back in January, so you should check this emote often, is what I'd say to the players in this case. But that's the 2009 emote. Of course, progressing through the year, we only got six left, so it should be interesting to see what we got for the rest of the year. One piercing note has been made free to play, which is good, I think. Increase the click zone to the Tyrannan tripwire traps. We all love these, don't we?
Thank goodness. Let me tell you.
Because you would try and run over these tripwires, or rather not run over them, but because the click area was so small, you would ultimately end up tripping on the tripwire and hurting yourself. So.
Poisoning yourself.
Yeah. So that's good that's been fixed after how many years this has been in game.
Oh my gosh.
Many.
Increase the catch chance for platypodes at level 48's gone from 51.63% chance to 78.98% chance at level 48 thieving. They have also reduced the chance to fail on agility handholds during Morning's End Part 2. At level 58, it's gone from 72.5% to 84.3% chance of success. And at level 70, it's gone from 82.53% chance to 90.16% chance. And, of course, no fail at level 91+. And finally, the Fremenic are sick of stray gnome balls hitting their tents. As such, gnome balls are now banned from the Daemonheim staging area.
That's really cool. I like the way they worded that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really see gnome balls that often, but I guess that's what people do when they're waiting for a dungeon party, or when they're checking their sinkhole rewards or something like that. So that was a funny one. But anything else jump out in the patch notes for you guys?
Not for me, no.
There was one for me. Oh, yeah, Coden's click area got reduced.
Oh, that's good, I guess, because that would affect you cutting ivy, yes?
It was, I know you hate it and I hate it too, but it was a big Reddit meme because Coden had a pretty ridiculous clicking area. His click range was very large, so now it's quite small.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you got to give them something at least once a month. So there you go.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, that's the patch notes for this week. We also have the Armor of Seasons, which is, of course, related to the Cloak of Seasons and the Crown of Seasons. More Treasure Hunter stuff, which I'm just going to say it. Unless you're buying spins, it's going to be impossible to get a full set.
Yeah. Yep. Go figure, though, right?
Yeah. Pieces, of course, can be collected too by skilling in herb lore, wood cutting, farming, and fire making. And you can trade them one for one with other players. You need 600 of each kind to create the outfit. And when you've made all four outfits, you can talk to Lady Naya southwest of Varrock and combine them to create the full armor of seasons. And then it will change based on whatever season it is. So, and of course, the armor of seasons is tradable as the yearly, I guess, treasure hunter rare. So,
more tradable treasure hunter rare.
Whoop-de-doo, eh?
Exactly.
So, I mean, the spring one looks kind of nice, but I don't think that there is any reason for me to get one of those aside from how it looks, and I'm not going to do that for Treasure Hunter. So,
yeah,
we'll see how many of these I can manage to accrue through my daily spins and any of the skills that I'm training, which is actually interesting this time of year because herb lore, wood cutting, and farming are three skills that I train practically every week. So
there you go.
We'll see. All right. Well, that's it for RS news this week. We're going to move straight on right now to a couple of your questions. Are you guys ready for that?
I'm ready.
Mm-hmm.
Okie dokie. Well, the first one is from the RR Man. He says, hey, hey, it's the RR Man here with a couple of corrections to last week's show. First off, how could you miss out on the PS4 game of the show? A Crash Bandicoot Remake Collection. I'm so excited for this, and now I'll have to buy a PS4. Just don't tell Parnassius, because he will remind me that bandicoots are from his country and I'll never hear the end of it. Secondly, another reason people don't like to update their iOS versions is that they break and slow down older devices. I should have learned that, but I updated my iPod Touch to version 9 and now it's slow and laggy pieces of word that I'm not going to say, and they don't make it easy to go back. Bloody Apple. But for a real question, I noticed how you guys mentioned these 0.5 gaming consoles are going to be like phones now, where you upgrade them every couple of years. Do you think it's a good idea for console makers to start doing this? Because in my opinion, people buy a console because it's easy and they can use it for many years. It's getting close to a PC at this point. I personally think this will backfire. Peace out. The RR Man. So, PS4 game of show, Crash Bandicoot Remake Collection.
Definitely has its niche. I know I'm going to be scolded for this quite a bit. I was never really into that series. I didn't really get into the console gaming scene really until GameCube. I never really had an N64, which is a shame because I really like the games, looking back and playing it. But, yeah, I was never really into Crash Bandicoot, but I know that's a huge, that really was, one of the games of show, for the PS4. And I know a lot of people that are excited for that. And it's really cool to see that. And I hope they, sort of go the route that, what was the big remake, for Xbox last year? Anyway, but yeah, I apologize for missing that. But yeah, I don't really think I'll be picking it up just for the sole fact of I was never really into it, so I can't personally justify spending the money on it, but it's definitely, it'll be on my radar. So,
all right, fair enough. And with regards to the iOS devices, yeah, I totally agree with you with that. I do think that when Apple puts out its list of specs, if your device is the last one that's recommended, as is the case right now, that the iPhone 5 is the last recommended device for iOS 10, you should probably not upgrade to iOS 10. Though the second last device and up are normally okay. And, you know, I don't know why they do that. I guess it's just the minimum requirement. And if you put the device, or rather the software on the device, you will be able to use it. It's just going to have a bit of lag.
Not as be optimal, yeah.
Yeah. Though I do have the 5S, and I can say that iOS 10 is really snappy on it. So I don't know how it would work on iOS 5. I don't have a device to test with that. But anyways, I would just say if you're worried about it, if you're the last device on the list, don't update. And it's unfortunate that you will miss out on the security updates that come with that. But it's both marketing and security as to why they do that. And the short version of this is, without going into the full technical side, is that when you request a software update from Apple, you essentially have to communicate with Apple's servers, and they sign that piece of software, that download, specifically for your device. So while it improves security to do that, to make sure that no one's intercepting that and making sure you're getting a genuine copy of the software, it does make it easy for them to basically kick certain iOS devices off the bridge, so to speak, so that people can't use them anymore or upgrade to them. So, and developers like that too, because then they need to focus on a specific subset of devices and whatnot. It just makes life a lot easier. So, the real question, is it good to update consoles like this? Dave, Colton, what do you guys think?
This is kind of a difficult subject, because it could go either way. Baseline, should they do this? No. But the way that, at least the way that Microsoft is approaching it, is the best way, and I think the most sensible way to do it. And the way to do that is, I think, a generation of consoles will be defined more generally, so to speak. Basically, what's making it all right for Microsoft is, in essence, they're making, you have the Xbox One, and then you're going to have the Xbox One S, which is going to be the slimmer version, and then you're going to obviously have the Project Scorpio. It's kind of a tiered system, but the thing that really makes it okay, in my opinion, is all the games are going to be across all platforms. What would create the problem, obviously, is if you're releasing a platform in which it's not going to be backwards compatible, or it's going to require new games. Because obviously, as we have seen over the past 3-4 years since the Xbox One was released, it was that gap of previous gen and this gen. Developers were having to, double their efforts in terms of porting it backwards, or just developing it separately. On a different engine to, still get the features that they wanted in the game. But I think if they're going to do it, I think Microsoft is going about it the right way in terms of having everything still be playable, so you don't have to upgrade, to play the games. You're just going to get that performance increase, and that really sort of leaves the decision up to the consumer and puts it in their court. If you want to spend the $300-$500 every 2 or 3 years to be on top of it, then so be it, because by all means, that's kind of how the technology industry is today, especially in terms of cell phones. But yeah, I mean, it's dangerous waters to tread in. I think Microsoft is going about it the right way. We'll see if Sony follows suit. But I mean, with how rapid everything is evolving, I think it's a little unrealistic to sort of expect that our current gen right now, without Project Scorpio and PS4 Neo and whatnot, I think it's a little far-fetched to think that those consoles will last 10 years at the rapid rate of how technology is advancing. So, overall, it's risky, and I said no at the start, but I think they're going about it the right way. So that's my long-winded response.
Yeah, it's definitely got to come down to backwards compatibility, and the Xbox One came out in November 2013. So I think if we can make it to 2020. And you're still able to use an original Xbox One to play games, albeit at a reduced resolution and maybe a reduced detail level, I think that can be called a success. Taking it to 2023, even more so, because there are still people that play games for the Xbox 360, and the 360 came out in 2005, I believe, or was it 2006? I'm not entirely sure. One of those years. But the point is that if you can maintain backwards compatibility for at least 5+ years, I think that's good enough, because we have to remember that the old console generations were not, the huge 6 or 7 year stretches that we had previously. They were much shorter. Mm-hmm. So I think anything north of 5 years is good, and that is a good point to wait for. Though, I don't know how much you'd be missing out on by 2020 if you're using an original Xbox One. That's something that they're going to need to take into account when developing games. So it's definitely going to be interesting going forward. But Colton, I know you don't have a console, but you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm not much of a console gamer. That's kind of why I've been quite quiet about this. But I agree with you. I think the main thing should be backwards compatibility. Other than that, I really don't have much of an informed opinion. I apologize.
All right. But yeah, I mean, if it looks like mud in 2020 on an original Xbox One, that might be a problem. Mm-hmm. But the way game developers are right now, you can kind of get a good experience even going back on older video cards based on how Microsoft's rendering technology works. But that's a topic for another show, so to speak. DirectX 9 versus DirectX 10 and a 2005 graphics card running a 2015 game. Yeah. All right. Colton, you want to read this one from Wiley?
Yeah, sure. This question's from Wiley. Do you guys think we'll ever see updates to Miscellanea? Or do you think ports is the new investment minigame in the way player-owned Kingdoms was? They could combine Kingdoms and temple trekking into a new managing system where you send adventurers out to various bosses to possibly make you more money. Or they could even open the resources up to a wider range, such as Oak Through You, or allow us to farm cabbages. Of course, the cabbages. Just interested in your thoughts on player-owned kingdoms. Thanks, Wiley.
You know, I think that Ports does a pretty good job of it right now. And yeah. The question I have is, where would you go after Ports? And where would you go after Miscellanea? Personally, I think Ports is pretty good as it stands right now in terms of rewards and mechanics that you can get from it. If anything, I would say that an update to Miscellanea would probably be in order just to modernize it. And, you know, maybe add one or two things, because it's been a while since we've had anything to deal with the Fremenic up there. Or maybe we could even have some kind of Sixth Age storyline going on there, though I know we kind of don't want to, you know, keep branching off in new directions with Sixth Age until everything Fifth Age is done. But with that being said, it certainly opens up the potential ideas of what could be done with the kingdom. At the bare minimum, I think it could go through a mechanical and graphical rework.
So, yeah, I agree. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you're fine. I was just going to say that I agree. I think Miscellanea and the kingdom are good as they are. I think if anything, they may need their rewards altered a little bit, but not too terribly much. Other than that, I think it's good on its own. I think if we're going to see any player-owned minigame type activities really be expanded, I think it'll be farming here soon.
Fingers crossed. What?
I hope, and there are several others within the community that hope so as well.
What?
Player-owned farms will be greenhouses.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I was wondering about that.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm one of those people.
Mm-hmm. If you couldn't have already told
you
me.
You caught my ear. Tell me more.
No, I mean, it's just whispers. I mean, I know a lot of people think it would be a good idea, and apparently Old School is getting some sort of paltry addition to their player-owned house that involves farming, so maybe that'll be a catalyst for RS3 to do a one-up. And
well, if they do it on Old School, it doesn't really come to RS3 ever.
Yeah, well, there have been some changes that have translated over, but I digress. So, but I'm hoping one day it'll happen. I'm holding out hope.
Yeah, definitely. That would be a great thing to have. I know I voted for that. It was my second highest update next to Prestige. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, followed by the construction updates. So fingers crossed as to what happens with that with the 2017 survey. So
agreed. Yeah.
How about you, Dave?
I think at best, thinking realistically, the most it would get would obviously be a rework. I think it might get its spot on a dead content list, not for deletion, but for just a small rework, most of which being rewards, as we've said. But also, you know, you have to be careful with that. As I said earlier, this MMO is probably has the strongest economy, or is based mostly on the economy, more so than others. So, you know, if you have to see it as a looking at it If you make U's available with that, obviously the U prices will drop. So you can't add too much high-level rewards, but I think enough. I think adding U's to that and maybe adding a couple, you know, maybe higher chances for higher level herbs, you know, maybe going one up from coal, especially with the, you know, the mining and smithing rework. I think it would be safe to allow, you know, everything up to rune, you know, to be gathered from
well,
the kingdom.
Especially with the mining and smithing rework, right?
Exactly. I think it would definitely need a little bit of planning in terms of how it's going to affect the economy. Ports does very well in the manner of, you know, a player-owned minigame, but I think it's a little bit, obviously, it's more higher level, for one, but it's also, you get less of a return, you know, because you have the success rate and it's kind of a mission thing and there's a lot more planning involved, as to where Kingdom, you throw money in, you wait a week, you wait a day, and you get that. It's pretty much guaranteed as to where.
Right. There's no risk involved.
Exactly. There's no risk involved. And obviously it's a lot higher level, you know, and it could take you every bit of a month, you know, 2-3 weeks to get all the material, you know, to build a Tetsu plate or, you know, scrimshaws or what have you.
I think it took me about 6 months once I actually, you know, started focusing on it. So.
Right. And I mean, that's assuming that you have, you know, the max level buildings and all of the, you know, statues to attract the right adventurers and, you know, get all the, you know, the trade good missions and whatnot. So I definitely think they're on different levels in terms of accessibility, whether it be level of rewards or, you know, return on investment, what have you. So, yeah, I definitely think it needs that rework, whether it be graphical or, you know, just reward system. But I think that's definitely something that should be looked at within the, you know, the near future, especially when we're getting all these older gathering skill reworks and sort of revisiting old quests to sort of bring them up to date. And especially their focus on sort of older content that's sort of irrelevant, not necessarily dead. So anyway.
All righty. Well, I think that does that question in. So thank you, Wiley, for submitting that. Mm-hmm. We enjoy your questions, Wiley. So if you want to send questions in like Wiley and the RR Man did, you do that by emailing questions@rsbnb.com. You can send us audio questions there by just including an attachment, or you can send text questions there if you want as well. Or you can leave us a voicemail or text 571-57-BNB, which translates to 571-572-2632. And that is, of course, an American number. So if you are foreign, you might incur some hefty long-distance charges with that. So for that reason, we encourage you to email or DM us on Twitter at RSBNB.
Indeed.
All right. So on to tech news we go. Some interesting things in the tech industry this week. First one, of course, starting with the music industry and YouTube. So I'm just going to get this out of the way first. Do you guys listen to music on YouTube?
Only if it's not available on any other mediums, which has come to happen a little bit more frequently the more I expand my musical, I guess you would call them interests. You know, there's obviously bands that I like and musical artists that I like that are pretty mainstream. But not to sound like a hipster, but there are some less popular bands, especially ones that I'll go to a show and, you know, they're not really out there yet, but they do have stuff on YouTube. But I necessarily, you know, I'm not going to go to YouTube to listen to AC/DC or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
All right. How about you, Colton?
Yeah, I don't really use it for music. I used to before I had a Spotify subscription, but now that I have that, I just use Spotify.
And I will say, in terms of YouTube, it is my main way of sharing music with someone, obviously. I know not too many, well, I guess I shouldn't say not too many people, because a lot of people do have a Spotify subscription. Obviously, I do, but that's not really something you can link to someone if they don't have one, you know, especially on mobile and stuff. So I will use YouTube in terms of just showing a friend a song or something of that nature. But as for me personally, I do not use it as a music listening
All right.
platform. So.
Well, Taylor Swift and U2 are lobbying the United States Congress with an open letter asking them to rewrite legislation used by YouTube and other large web platforms to ensure that they get paid properly. Because as it is right now, artists like Taylor Swift and U2 and others really don't get too much off of YouTube when their videos are played or when their music is used in other videos as backing tracks, as people like to do on the internet. So basically, Swift and the co-signers are complaining about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, the DMCA, and that is, of course, the law that governs copyright on the internet in the United States. And they are basically saying that they want musicians and the companies that own the music, the record labels, to ensure that websites like Google, YouTube, do ultimately give them enough money for their music being used. Because like you guys have both said, you guys listed on Spotify, which has their own deals with the record labels. And the record labels don't exactly have deals with YouTube and whatnot to ensure that they get a fair rate from this. So this is going to be interesting going forward, because we need to remember that Google also owns something called Google Play Music, which is a place where people can go to listen to high-quality music, not on YouTube, under the Google umbrella if they do have a significant investment in the Google ecosystem. So this, you know, it might have seemed like this whole thing was fleshed out a number of years ago, but this debate still goes on with the music industry and online websites like this. So it's going to be interesting to watch what comes from this. So I personally think that Google Play Music and YouTube need to come under the same umbrella, because we have access to Google Play Podcasts. If you search for RuneScape Podcast or RSBNB Update, we're on there. So there's no reason why you can't necessarily combine certain aspects of Google Play Music and YouTube to show that, okay, so if you're using a song on YouTube, there should be a link to Google Play Music that pops up and driving people to give a certain portion of the revenue. There's no reason Google can't do that. They're a very rich company. So
yeah,
something definitely should be done on this, I think, unless you guys happen to have any differing opinions on that.
Nope, I think it's pretty well in line.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah.
Because you look, and Google owns Google Play Music, yet they're ripping people off with YouTube. It seems like a perfect solution that you kind of just merge the two together, or right, at least the musical side of Play Music and YouTube. So, mm-hmm. Anyways, I don't know. Maybe it's just a legal reason why it can't be done. But next thing, of course, deals with Facebook. A bit of an update on the story we were tracking last month relating to Facebook supposedly censoring opinions on its newsfeed with way of its newsroom. So Facebook employees going forward will have to undergo training to deal with their political biases, Facebook chief operating officer Sheryl Sandberg said on Wednesday evening. And I quote, "We think a lot about diversity at Facebook, and we have a managing bias class that all of our leaders and a lot of our employees have taken that I was part of helping create. And we focused on racial bias, age bias, gender bias, national bias, and we're going to add a new scenario on political bias." So, obviously, this is once again relating to the allegations that certain websites or topics were shut down by the editors of Facebook's trending news section, and that spawned the whole firestorm online and spurred Facebook to meet with conservative leaders in the U.S. Now, Facebook is taking one step further to ensure diversity here. So, what do you guys think? You think it's right that Facebook is looking at dealing with political bias in addition to all the other biases on this?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's probably one of the most important ones, especially, you know, I'm glad they're focusing on this in a time where it's probably been some of the highest it's been, at least in our generation or time period, with everything soaring around with the election and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, political bias, it's kind of, in my opinion, you have it all or you have none. And clearly it was a huge debacle with political, even when they had the others in place. And we see how that, you know, obviously didn't really hold up. So I'm glad to see that they're really taking a step further in this sort of initiative, if that's what you want to call it. But yeah, as being the largest social network, you know, on the planet, I think it is their duty to ensure – that it's, you know, as neutral as possible. You know, we don't want, and I know Facebook doesn't want them to be branded as, you know, a certain party, you know, platform, being as universal as it is. So I'm glad to see that they're, you know, taking a step further and being as neutral as they can.
Yeah. And I think I know where you're going with this, Colton. I'm going to say something and then you tell me if you're right.
Okay.
So one thing that people inside the conservative movement and in typically free enterprise thinkers and libertarian thinkers like to think is that we don't need restrictions telling us how to think, let alone coaching classes on telling us how to think. And as a result, people should be able to see in their contract, it says you check your bias at the door. So therefore, you should be able to try and do this on your own without needing to undergo some kind of potential hypothetical training class. Is that the direction you were going?
Yeah, primarily. And I was going to say that if they have bias and they're, I mean, it's all right to have bias. Everyone has a right to their own opinion. My issue is when they claim to be an egalitarian platform who expresses a variety and cornucopia of views. If that's simply not the truth, that's where I have issue. And I don't know. It's you can't. I don't think you can police that because that's borderline mind control.
Yep.
I think that's something that's up to the individual, and it's part of your individual rights. So I think that they're treading on a thin line, but you know, we'll see. I'm not too confident in Facebook's management anyhow. So
yeah, and I mean, I would love for this to happen without any need of these kind of classes, but at the same time, I think that if people who were complaining about this accept something like this, it doesn't make it any better than when we complain about people, you know, wanting to have some kind of overarching authority to change people's minds, which is what Facebook is essentially doing for their employees. And yes, they are allowed to say that, but it is something that shouldn't need to be done. And I agree with you, Colton, but I don't know. It's going to certainly be an interesting year to see where this platform goes and if Facebook can emerge as the, you know, equal partner for all sides here. And if they could do that, all the power to them. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
I would absolutely love it if they were able to do that.
Agreed.
And the final piece of tech news this week is relating to PayPal and online currencies. In this case, most known as Bitcoin. So, PayPal is warming up to Bitcoin is, of course, the heading here. And basically what this means is that PayPal is looking at the option of allowing PayPal users to pay with Bitcoins. It's not possible to buy Bitcoins yet, but they are looking at a way of selling Bitcoins and using the Bitcoins to purchase things. So if a company like PayPal got behind a cryptocurrency like Bitcoin, that would certainly move Bitcoin ahead in terms of gaining some kind of traction. Because for anyone who isn't aware, basically Bitcoin is a blockchain currency, which means that there's basically an encrypted block, and each time this encrypted block is hashed and a hash matches up, someone is awarded with a certain amount of Bitcoin, and that's how these Bitcoins are distributed to people who take part in hashing. Then the people who hold these Bitcoins can use them to purchase things online and other places, presumably, therefore spreading Bitcoin around like you spread around any other kind of currency. Yeah. So I know, Dave, you're very interested in this because post-show last week, Dave and I actually had a discussion on Bitcoin, and you're actually looking into working with some of this kind of stuff. So
yeah,
it's got to be very interesting to you that a big player in the online payment market is interested in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, over the past week, I've been doing extensive research on the entire subject. You know, Bitcoin, Litecoin, all the different you know, algorithms and whatnot. Whether or not it's profitable to invest in a cloud mining rather than having your own physical hardware to do the mining. And just recently, I guess it was a couple days ago now, I started kind of establishing myself in the community by signing up with some trading websites and sort of getting my accounts going. I think I've made the decision to purchase my own hardware. But what really caught my eye about this, you know, piece of news is it mentions that PayPal is working with Coinbase. And Coinbase, for those of you that don't know, it is one of the largest Bitcoin wallets, which basically means, you know, when you collect these Bitcoins, whether it be through mining or, you know, making transactions with someone else, it's basically an application that is unique to you and you get a code and then you can send and receive Bitcoins, you know, as necessary.
But and that's a company that PayPal has actually partnered with, Coinbase.
Correct. And basically what caught my eye about Coinbase is you can sell the Bitcoins that you gain for your native currency, and I think there's only a few that it's the euro and the US dollar, and I think there might be one other.
You're going to want to add the Great British Pound to that eventually.
Right, exactly.
this does some breaking news for people who, well, not won't be breaking by the time you hear it, but yeah, as we're recording this, the UK has voted to leave the EU.
Indeed. But anyway, what has caught my eye about Coinbase is being able to sell these Bitcoins for your native fiat currency. And this is one of the, I don't want to say only, but one of the only ones I found just with the research I've done. But the only way for you to do this is to link your actual bank account to this app. And I've been a little skeptical with doing that, and I haven't done it yet. And I know a lot of people have done it. It's trusted, but anything, you know, having that sort of direct access to something so personal and obviously vital in your life is kind of, you know, you're going to have some skepticism. So I really like the fact that PayPal is, you know, warming up to this and especially partnering with this company in particular,
right,
which can sort of give that extra layer of cushion if something does happen. You know, all of the Bitcoins that I will have, you know, obtained, I can sort of put it in a third party, but something I still trust. You know, obviously I have a PayPal account, but it's basically making a payment to my PayPal account rather than having direct access to my bank account. So it's not necessarily of me not trusting Coinbase and what they're going to do with it, but hackings have happened in the past to where they don't have control over it. So it's just adding the extra layer of cushion. And also I think PayPal sort of getting their feet wet with the cryptocurrency is only going to benefit its value and its whole ecosystem, if you will. And, you know, being accepted as a bigger form of payment, I can only see it rising and becoming, you know, being more demand. So yeah, that's kind of my little economics. I don't know what you want to call it.
But. Yeah. And the thing that needs to be underscored here is that anytime you're dealing with a virtual currency like Bitcoin, it's as good as cash. There's no tracking it. It basically can be spent anywhere and you can disseminate it however you want. You can send it through email. You can send it through apps. You can send your entire keychain to someone else. And if you lose it, you lose it. It's just like cash. So this is big. And the question remains is that once this gets out onto eBay, how does the wider world perceive this? And that's something we're going to have to watch.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to help in terms of going mainstream. You know, 2 years ago, Bitcoin was, I don't even think it broke $5 a Bitcoin. And just through increased, you know, popularity and people accepting it, as of right now, I believe, I checked before the show and one Bitcoin is just over $640. So that just goes to show, how it's really growing. And I find it interesting in the timing of this, because for those of you that are familiar in the scene, know that every, 210,000 blocks that are solved, the reward for solving a block is halved. So right now, Every block that is solved rewards 25 bitcoins. Well, the current block count right now is just over 417,000. So in another 3,000 blocks, it's going to go down from 25 per block to 12.5 per block. In essence, basically having the amount of bitcoins that are coming into the system, and basic supply and demand would infer that it's going to rise. And that on top of PayPal sort of accepting this, and like Shane was saying, you know, if it's accepted into eBay, if we're going to get an increased demand on top of a more increased demand, because you're pretty much having...
You're going to hash out all the remaining bitcoins pretty fast.
You're going to hash out all the remaining... Yeah, you're going to hash out all the remaining bitcoins. But what's so appealing and what people don't realize is, you know, they see this cryptocurrency in being something as, oh, it's just another way for Big Brother to track you. It's just another, you know, paper trail. But that's actually the opposite. It's completely untrackable. Mm-hmm. It's basically...
Just cash.
It's cash online. And once people realize that and they can move away from doing credit card transactions, you know, this is the most secure way to, you know, make transactions over the internet. And as we all know, it's the age of information. You know, it's really becoming, you know, online commerce. So basically being able to use cash online is something people need to embrace. And I think this on top of the blockchain blockchain reward halving is really going to show a skyrocket. So it's definitely huge, as we've said, and I'm interested to see sort of where this goes. Yeah. And I'll definitely be watching.
One final thing before we move on. Back when Bitcoin was first starting, I listened to a podcast, Security Now, on Twit, and the guy who hosts Security Now basically took his i7, put it online, and got 50 Bitcoins when it was first starting out, and that is now worth $33,000.
Yeah, they were saying how people were able to just take their normal, you know, systems and CPU mine. And for those of you that don't know, CPU mine is the lowest form of mining you can do. It's now moved to GPU and it's evolved. But if you want to talk to me about that, you can hit me up on Twitter. But anyway, yeah, people were basically doing this with a single computer in their garage, you know, getting 50 bitcoins a day. And, you know, as Shane was saying, these people that have accrued this much, you know, selling it today, it could easily surpass, you know, millions of dollars. So it's really crazy to see how this has grown. So
indeed. Alrighty. Colton, anything else on that?
No. My sort of response to all of it is yes.
All right.
Nod your head and smile.
Well then, with that being said, we'll move on to the Skill of the Month update. Our crafting Skill of the Month, Parnassia, still in first place with 5.4 million XP gained. Second place is And That's Bad with 5.2, and then Poison Nova looks to have secured third place with around 1.8 million XP gained, though there could be room for some movement for Sorensen57 to move into third, or maybe even second, depending on how the rest of the month goes. 8 days left. So we'll be watching this one with anticipation. And I know these ones are hard for you guys, so well done to everyone who's been fighting out the skill of the month. Crafting is really expensive.
Absolutely.
All right. Also, on the achievements of the week this week, we got a good number of them, so I'll just read all these out to you guys. Santa Enz from Clan Quest got 120 invention on June 22nd. Congratulations. Aphemerab got 99 magic on the 21st of June. Dat Engineer, 120 invention on the 19th. Eon, 120 defense on the 18th. And Metal Maniac 9 got 120 magic on June 17th. So lots of 120s in there this week. Good job,
yeah,
everyone.
I like seeing that. That's great.
Wow, awesome.
Yeah, and of course, for anyone who doesn't know, Metal Maniac 9 is the community member who does everything self-sufficiently. He was the original Iron Man.
He is the original Iron Man, pioneer of his time.
Yes. So it'd be... What are you humming?
Iron Man by Black Sabbath.
Oh. Okay. Anyways. Congratulations.
Woo!
And I believe Colton has a pick of the week.
Yeah, Rachel and I actually watched this this documentary here this week on Netflix. It's called Som Into the Bottle. As I've said before and have mentioned on the show, I'm into wine and studying to be a winemaker, all that lovely stuff, blah, blah, blah. But this is really for anyone who is just interested in the drink. You don't even have to like drinking it, but it's a very historied and artistic expression in the creation and selling and consumption of the wine. And it's just a really complex system that is broken down very well in this documentary. It's basically the sequel from a 2012 documentary called Somm, which followed four sommeliers who were basically going through certifications that were really tough to become master sommeliers. That's more for people who are really into wine and already have a bit of a background in it. But this is the sequel, but takes a much wider scope and really looks at it breaks it down into 10 chapters, as it were. And it looks at history, politics, and the pleasure of wine, the creation of wine, consumption, how prices are determined, all that kind of stuff. It's really well done in depth. It offers a lot of different views from winemakers, from sommeliers, from wine writers, all kinds of people. So it's a really interesting documentary. It's on iTunes. It's on Netflix. The link is the IMDb page for it, but it's one that I definitely would recommend. It made me want to grab a glass and pour some out. So if you're interested at all, I think it's definitely well worth the time, and it's very well done.
All right. Yeah, it actually looks very well done. I just found the trailer here. So, yeah. All right. You can find that on iTunes and Netflix and probably Amazon Video. But I think that definitely iTunes and Netflix are probably the big two where we would look for such a thing. So they're all there. So just look up Somm Into the Bottle on iTunes or Netflix. Mm-hmm. Alrighty, thank you for that.
No problem.
So, what have we been up to? Colton, you can update us of what you've been up to, RS and otherwise, since you last been on.
Yeah, RS time has unfortunately been a little bit more tough to come by here, but I've been making it on at least every day or two to do a little bit of daily stuff. I got married almost a month ago, actually. And married life has been very nice. I'm definitely enjoying it. A lot of people told me that the first year is hell. At least the first month has gone down fairly smoothly. I'm trying to stay fairly quiet because she's trying to sleep. Who knew that my bedtimes were unreasonable? No, she usually stays up, but she has to get up rather early tomorrow. Anyhow, just basically working and all that kind of stuff, just normal summer. Things are crazy. But, you know, hey, had to spend the night at my parents' house last night because there were tornado warnings at like 2 a.m.
Oh, and, wow.
We don't have a basement. So ended up sleeping there. That was fun.
Wow.
But other than that, things have been good. Enjoyed the Gower Quest this week and looking forward to other things in Gillinor. So, yeah, that's how I've been.
Sounds good. And you, Dave?
Yeah, just standard, you know, logging into do dailies when I can, you know, slowly chipping away and trying to keep up to date with the, you know, comp and trim requirements. You know, obviously did the quest this week, really enjoyed that. But yeah, it's pretty pretty straightforward, just nothing too exciting in game, just kind of chipping away. And, you know, as far as real world stuff, just staying at the grind at work. So, you know, just doing what I do. So. Anyway.
Alrighty, that sounds good. As for me this week on RS, been working on a bit of Herb Lore, but as I mentioned, it goes through tons of market swings. So what works one day and doesn't cost you an arm and a leg might cost you an arm and a leg next week. I think the only real sane way of doing Herb Lore is to gather everything yourself, but it is kind of hard to gather secondary ingredients, I must admit. Yeah. So I just look for bargains on the exchange where I can find them either in ingredients or in potions, combination potions like Super Prayer Renewal that don't break the bank. So that's what I've been up to on RS and herb farming and with that, a couple of clue scrolls along the way, though nothing that great. Just, you know, I was kind of hard on that update about the scanning, thing when that came out. You always have the window open to scan.
Oh, yeah.
But that is a lifesaver in the chaos tunnels. Clearly.
It really is.
It's proven its worth.
Yeah, so I might not have liked it for all the other ones, but it definitely works for the chaos tunnels.
There you go.
All right. But aside from that, not too much. We are, of course, going to have coverage of next week's Telos boss with someone who is competent in the realm of PVM, which is neither Dave or myself. So we will bring you someone who will not destroy their fingers while doing that update. That can be guaranteed, so you can look forward to that. But with that being said, we really enjoyed talking about the Gower Quest, as you can probably tell by the time the show has been running on, or it could be from the watch being dead again. That I haven't
still time to get a new one.
Yeah, I haven't. Like, I have the time running on my phone, but you can't see that on the screen. So,
right.
But anyways, thank you, Colton, for joining us.
Of course.
Excellent job of stepping in at the last moment when Reed came down sick. So, thank you, Colton,
it's a
for being
to be
here.
Back.
Yeah, we love having you. And of course, Dave, me and him will be back next week to discuss everything Telos related and otherwise. But in the meantime, just remember we're in Friends Chat Bitsbyte if you want to come and sit with us or chat with us in game, and follow us on Twitter at RSBNB. And thank you for sharing your time with us. We'll see you again next week.
See ya.
Farewell.